Hey everybody, Rich Grisham here with a world exclusive announcement. We are announcing today that Franchise Hockey Manager 3 is coming on October 17th, 2016, and for the first time ever, it is officially licensed by the NHL. We could not be more excited about this. This is the next generation of hockey strategy. It is Franchise Hockey Manager 3 is the deepest, most authentic hockey strategy experience you can find, including, as I said, for the first time ever officially licensed by the NHL. And it's got an all-new mode, Path to Glory, that gets you in and having fun really quickly. You can take the reins of your favorite NHL franchise to capture the Stanley Cup Championship. It's got tons of new features, options, and tactics, and so much more that we're going to be announcing over the next couple of weeks. I mentioned it's coming October 17, 2016, but if you pre-order it today, you get 25% off, $10 off the price. You get it for just $29.99 if you pre-order it today, anytime before October 17th. It's for the Mac, it's for the PC, it's from the makers of Out of the Park Baseball. It's Franchise Hockey Manager 3. It is officially licensed by the NHL. It's coming October 17th, 2016. So go to your computer, go to outoftheparkdevelopments.com, click on Franchise Hockey Manager 3, pre-order it today, get $10 off. We are really excited. The NHL has licensed Franchise Hockey Manager 3. It's the best hockey strategy game you can buy. Well, hey everybody, it is racing season, or shall I say racing game season. And there is no group of people I would rather talk to about the bumper crop of great racing video games than the two people that I have the honor of having on the show this evening. Up first, you know him well from the great Player One podcast in Generation 16 and a regular Hit the Pass contributor, Mr. Greg Seward. Greg, welcome back to the show.
Oh, happy to be here. Happy to talk about racing games.
And the other official Hit the Pass racing expert. In fact, at the end of the show, we're going to have them fight to claim to see who is the top dog. Actually, no, we won't do that. At least not on the air. We'll wait till afterwards. The great Australian, Dr. Ken Parker. Dr. Ken, welcome back, sir.
Rich, it's an absolute pleasure to be here live at the Outback Module for the Forza Horizon Festival. We've got big cars, we've got loud cars, we've got blowflies the size of jet airplanes down here.
Love it.
It's awesome.
Is that why my windshield keeps cracking when I'm flying down the freeway? Am I hitting the blowflies? Is that what's going on?
Yeah. There are many things that are great about Forza's representation of Australia, but the every time I drive past the Outback Festival, I remark about how terrible being out in the Outback must be with all the terrible blowflies and incredible heat. There would be no way in the world that anyone would be out there watching race cars out in the desert. But anyway.
So one of the great things about Hit the Pass is that we do have two fantastic racing correspondents. One of the challenges of that is the fact that they are literally on opposite sides of the world. Greg is in Nova Scotia, and Dr. Ken is in Australia. What part of Australia exactly, Dr. Ken?
So I'm just south of Perth, which is on the western side of the continent. Although I spent the first 30 years of my life on the east coast, so yeah.
So a huge thanks to both of them for arranging their schedules to where we could have them both on live. So thank you guys. You guys are fantastic. So we're going to talk about a lot of stuff. Obviously, we're going to talk about Forza Horizon 3. We're also going to talk about F1, and we're also going to talk about NASCAR. But before we even get into that, you know, Greg Seward, I'm going to start with you. It wasn't that long ago, less than 2 years ago, that you and Pete Dodd and I were lamenting on this very show about the state of racing games and how concerned we were with the current state and the future. And here we are, not 2 years later, and we have had a incredible resurgence in racing games that, by the way, does not appear to be stopping anytime soon. Greg, what happened?
I don't know. I mean, you look back and yeah, there was some dark times there, especially when you had places like Black Rock Studios closing down and Bizarre Creations closing down. And now suddenly it's a bumper crop. And you're right. It shows no sign of stopping. Like, I can't get over the amount of really good racing games that we've had over the past, like, 16, 18 months. Even the ones you described, absolutely. And then you've got other stuff like Drive Club, Assetto Corsa. Like, there's no end in sight, and it's great. And now that VR is on the way, I hope that it keeps going.
Yeah, you haven't even, yeah, we haven't even really talked about VR. That has, you know, many people, at least, you know, I've heard a number of people talk about how VR is going to even, you know, push racing games even more because of how that lends, you know, VR lends itself very well to racing games. So we'll get to that in a minute. Dr. Cannon, we'll turn it over to you for a second. From your perspective, did we ever have that that dip and or did we accurately represent that, or was it more just of anything kind of a typical cycle, and now we just seem to be sort of at an apex now?
I wonder whether that it might be to do with the changeover with the new consoles. I mean, the end of the generation of the last consoles, it seemed like a lot of racing games had kind of reached the maximum potential that they were going to get out of the old boxes. And with the new boxes, we had, you know, titles like Forza 5, which I think gets a little bit of a bad rap sometimes, but it was a launch title. You know, it took a little while for all games, whether it was the sports games, whether it was, you know, shooters or RPGs, to find their footing in the new consoles. And what we're seeing now is just an amazing range of top tier racing games, but also the sort of the middle tier games, games like Sebastian Loeb Rally, the WRC series, Dirt Rally, which is arguably, you know, a tier above those titles. And the Assetto Corso, there that the we're actually getting a not only the big headline games like Forza, like Drive Club, but we're getting a nice range of secondary racing games that don't necessarily have the budget, but are you know, producing really good games.
So, a number of people have pointed out to me recently that Hit the Pass has really become a destination for racing game content. And to that I say, yes, you're right. And again, that's because we have, you know, Greg and Ken who regularly contribute, as well as TJ as well. But what's also interesting about that is Dr. Ken being a huge, you know, fan of the sport is not just doing sort of the review roundtables that we do. But Dr. Ken, you put together a number of very interesting pieces, the latest of which is talking about how Forza Horizon 3 feels from an Australian perspective. That's on top of some of the articles you've written in the past, including one about the tragic passing of a Formula One driver and the impact on you on playing as him in a version of the game afterwards. So, you know, if you're listening to this podcast, obviously you're a fan of racing games, I urge you to go check out not only Greg's pieces in the review roundtables, but also some of the really great stuff that Dr. Ken has done. So I want to start with Forza Horizon 3. That's the big tentpole racing game, and it is set in Australia. And Dr. Ken, you are Australian. Let's lead off with that. Talk to us a little bit more about how that feels, being an Australian, and how well Australia is represented in Forza Horizon 3.
Yeah, I mean, at the going back to the sort of initial E3 trailer that came out, and I mean, that was such an impressive trailer, and there'd been some rumors about the game being set in Australia, and I was a little bit skeptical of that, simply because having lived here all my life and driven the length of the country and breadth of the country over the years, there is a lot of nothing in Australia. You know, the outback is very, very big, and you can drive for two or three days straight and not see anything. We are a country the size roughly of the United States, and we have 20 million people, and there is a lot of nothing around. So to see a game that is being able to recreate that nothing, but the beauty of that nothing, so the outback stages, but also the diversity of the landscape that we have. It's actually made me appreciate a little bit more the landscapes that we do have in Australia, the arid forests through to the rainforests, through the beautiful coastlines. They've made a loving recreation of my home, and being able to drive around that world in a Lamborghini or a souped-up Skyline and flip some doughies is absolutely fantastic.
So I'm curious, about that representation, I mean, I've played several hours of Forza Horizon 3. It's got cities, it's got coastline, it's got desert, it's got outback. Is it a video gamey version, or is there some real reality to, sorry to put those two words together, to how Australia feels to you in Forza Horizon 3?
Yeah, certainly it is not a one-to-one representation. There are parts, though, that are a one-to-one representation. Their version of Surface Paradise, for example, there are streets like Cavill Avenue, like the boulevard that runs from Surface Paradise up to Main Beach, that are exactly the same as the real world. They have many of the landmark buildings. The Q1 building, which is the tallest building in Australia, is on the Gold Coast, and it's in the game. And having spent many weeks on holidays at the Gold Coast, there are parts where you can pull over the car and look out the window and go, wow, I know that pizza place. I know that pub that's on the corner there. So it has an incredible sense of place in that sense. Where, of course, it is deviates from that is in the fact that you can drive from the Gold Coast to Byron Bay in 2 minutes. These places are that's the equivalent of driving from Miami to Philadelphia. They're opposite ends of the country, and so what they've done is they've taken many of the best parts of Australia and jumbled all around, but it's a bit like Disneyland in the sense that you've got all these different worlds, but when you walk through Disneyland, there's an amazing transition that you walk through a door and suddenly you're in a different part of the world, and you do that without seeing the seams. And what they've done is they've managed those transitions quite incredibly. That going from the very sandy outback through to the rainforest, it feels like a smooth transition, and the world creation they've done there is absolutely fantastic.
So, Forza Horizon 3, Greg, is being lauded by almost everybody as an amazing game. Not just people like us who love racing games, but people like your co-host on the Player One podcast, Chris Johnston, who is not exactly a racing game fan, but he is a fan of the franchise and is enjoying this as many people are. Before we talk about why the racing is so good, why is Forza Horizon 3... like the analog to me is kind of like Rocket League. People who aren't sports games fans just went nuts for Rocket League. What is it about Forza Horizon 3 that seems to be appealing to so broad of a group of people?
Well, I mean, it's got all of the great user friendliness that the Forza games have had for years. If you start looking at racing games in general over the last 5 or 6 years, there's nothing that comes close to this sort of community involvement. And user friendliness in general. I mean, everything is just taken care of you. It's done really easily. It's like, your car needs to be upgraded. Just press this button and we'll upgrade it for you. Give us 2,000 credits, something like that. But there was still sort of that barrier to entry for a casual fan, even in the Forza the main series, which is it's still a circuit racing game. And I'm not interested in those things, right? But you get something like the Horizon series, where you've got that wonderful open world and it's still got all that user friendliness, and it's just so easy to slide into it. Nothing is punitive in this game. Like head on collisions, they'll stop you for a second, but you keep going.
Yes. No, thank God. Plus there's a rewind button too.
Right. Rewind button, no police chases, nothing like that. And you can fiddle with the difficulty very easily. Just everything is super simple. If you finished a race and you want to try it again, you press X and you reset the difficulty and you go for it again. The races are short. The events are exciting. You've got crazy things like racing a train and racing a balloon. And, there's just so much to do. And it takes everything that I think a lot of us were really enjoying 5-10 years ago in something like a Need for Speed and Burnout as far as the open world stuff went, but it takes out all of the bad. It takes out everything that was frustrating in any way, and it's just you can get your money's worth from these games just driving around and doing whatever you want. There's always something to do. And speaking to what Dr. Ken says is like, not only is like the level of authenticity, I think is great. And it's funny that you said Disney World, because in my mind, that's exactly what the map is, where it's kind of like a one of those theme park maps, you know, where you've got the main areas that are kind of bigger and they're more detailed, but then the in-betweens are, you know, just kind of there. But the thing that the Forza Horizon games have always had, of course, is just gorgeous visuals, gorgeous vistas. I was just playing before we started tonight, and I was driving toward the Outback, actually, and it was nighttime, and like this sky was just lit up with stars, and it was just, you know, and you got that great feeling that a lot of us that ever have done a long road trip will know, where, you know, all you have is the dashboard light, right? And you got that beautiful glow if you're running in cockpit view. You've got the darkness outside with the stars. It's just a relaxing game. There's something about it that's very comfortable, and I think that's why the casual crowd likes it as well.
But it's also really pulse-pounding, right? I mean, I was racing around Surfer's Paradise, you know, which is a city. So I was in the middle of, or I ran through the championship, had three or four different races, a couple of circuit races, a couple of, you know, multi-lap races, and you know, between the music and the cars and the tight turns, you just it really grabs you. Forza is it's all about real cars, right? So these are real world cars that you can customize or not. But it's not the technical kind of racing so much as the Forza proper series, or at least it doesn't feel like that. I mean, it's clearly tailored to a broader crowd. How do they still, Greg, how do they still sort of get the racing part right while also being fast but not punitive? Like there's it's difficult to describe, but they found that equation and somehow they've made that algebra work really well.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely based on the Forza proper, but yeah, it's just a lot more forgiving. And I think that it really has everything to do with it. It's forgiving. If you see like a fence and you hit it, you're not going to wreck. You're going to slide through. There's very few trees that you're going to get stuck behind, you know, and you've always got that rewind button there. So there's just, it's just easy to play. Like that's the only way I can describe it. The AI is aggressive, but it doesn't wreck you. The oncoming cars, again, like if you hit them, you can just kind of keep going. You're not like, you know, try again, that sort of thing. And one of the other things that I wanted to throw out there that I really love is that if you've got a Kinect hooked up, or I believe if you just have your headset with a microphone, you don't even need to use the map screen in this game to go from place to place. You just call out to Anna, the navigation system, and say, what should I do next? And she's like, there is a race over here. Do you want to go to it?
She's great.
Do you want to go to the race? Sure, let's do that.
Yes, I do.
and it's like I have barely touched the map screen in this game because I can just sit there and drive. All I have to do is drive, and it's fantastic.
So let's go ahead.
Sorry, Doug. Rich.
Yep.
To your point about the way that the controls work, I think that what the Forza Horizon games do that separates them from some other arcade-y racing games is there's a real weight to the cars. So that it gives the cars a sense of precision that you actually feel like you're in more of control of the cars as you drive them, because they actually have a bit of a weight. And so that it's not a small flick of the controller won't immediately send you careening off the road, because each of the cars has a definite mass and a definite momentum to it, which makes the racing experience feel much more natural, which oddly actually makes it more of a simulation. But because they convey that weight so well through the force feedback through your controller, it actually makes it easier to drive than perhaps even the most arcadey of racing games, or even something like Need for Speed. I think that it's easier to drive in Forza Horizon than it is in the most recent Need for Speed games.
I totally agree, and I would agree with that. I love the last Need for Speed game, not because it was necessarily a technical marvel, or certainly not because that story was good. It was fun, and I liked it for what it was. But yeah, Forza Horizon compared to Need for Speed, the driving And the driving overall is just, I just feel like I'm much more in control of my vehicle. You know, it's funny you mentioned the weight of the cars. Like the first few races I did, I had this really sporty Nissan. And then the second set of races was this BMW. And you can tell the difference in those two cars. The BMW feels like a tank and not like slow moving, but it just
doesn't turn like a
no. Like a Nissan. Yeah. It absolutely does not.
That's the impressive thing with this game is, you know, it's an arcade racing game, but at the same time, those cars feel like you think they should feel, you know, within reason. The other thing, too, that I think they've gotten really right, and I don't know how they've done it exactly, but the various surfaces that you race on, you can tell the difference, and there's something supremely satisfying about being in like a four-wheel slide on a dirt road, sliding onto tarmac, because your tires will grab it and you can feel your tires grabbing it and giving you that forward momentum because your wheels are spinning. And it's just like there's just something about it. And again, because of that rewind feature, you feel free to take a lot of risk. And it leads to very exciting situations. Like if you're coming down a hill into some really tall grass or trees, you feel fine about bombing through there and either something amazing is going to happen, or you're going to hit something. You're going to rewind and try again.
Yeah. And that's where this lineage from the simulation Forza games kicks in. So because they've built for more than 10 years now, they know what a rear wheel drive car feels like. They know what a front wheel drive car feels like. They know what a mid engine or a front engine or a rear engine car feels like. And so, you know, if you take my dream car is the Dodge Charger, and mm-hmm. so I drive the Dodge Charger Hellcat. I love driving it. It's not actually a good car to race in. You compare that with the Camaro, which is it's the same year, you know, same effectively rear-wheel drive, front engine, modern American muscle car, but they feel different. And because they've done all this work in the simulations to actually make them feel different, and sadly, as a person who likes Dodges, the Camaro is easier to drive. But, you know, that's also because in real life it is easier to drive.
So many things I want to talk about. First of all, we mentioned rewind. I like that it's there, especially when I need it, because as fun as a race is, it's a lot more fun to win a race than it is to come in third or in fifth. And so, you know, when I do make a stupid mistake, which I have a tendency to do on occasion, I'll hit that rewind button. But on the other hand, it feels like I'm cheating, and I know Rewind isn't brand new to Forza Horizon 3. I'm torn on Rewind. I love it that it's there, but I definitely approach the races differently because I know that I can. Dr. Ken, where do you stand on the Rewind?
Oh, I mean, I use the Rewind. What I do is I pump up the difficulty quite high in the game because mm-hmm. There isn't necessarily the incentive to win in Forza the way there is in previous games, because of the leveling up system, you get so many points or experience points for racing in the pack. So you'll find that if you get out in the lead, you might get clean racing bonuses, but you don't get slipstreaming bonuses. You won't necessarily get in the trading paint bonuses. You won't get half the wreckage bonuses. And so if you're in the middle of the pack for quite a few of those laps, then you actually rack up a much, much higher scores than you would if you're just out in the lead. And frankly, you know, being out in the lead is not as much fun in this game, of course, as messing it around with the other driver tires and bouncing off them and careening into them occasionally. So, while I use the rewind function, I tend to try and boost up the AI difficulty to make it a genuine challenge and that winning is not guaranteed. And certainly in the off-road sections of the game, I think there's some difficulty spikes, which mean that finishing in the top half is not necessarily an easy task.
Greg, where are you with Rewind?
I try not to use it, but honestly, I don't care whether I do use it or not. I actually am very much in the same vein as Dr. Ken. And we've talked about this before, Rich, where I don't care if I win most of the time. I care that I got to race. I would much rather, you know, be in that situation where I'm trying to squeeze the right trigger a little harder down a straightaway near the end because I can see the leader right there and I'm just trying to get to him. But I want to race in the pack. And like Dr. Ken said, that you get rewarded for that in this game. I'm not, I will use Rewind. I don't use it a lot, but I don't feel bad about using it because I'm well past the point that I feel like I need to prove anything to anybody in these games.
So difficulty. Oh, go ahead, Dr. Ken.
So- One thing I will say is that, of course, Rewind is disabled in the new online co-op career mode. And if you're a person who doesn't think they use Rewind a lot, doing the career co-op mode, and the first time you hit that Y button or the select button, I can't remember which one it is on in Forza for the Rewind, and then nothing happens because it's disabled in online, you certainly work out that you use it more than you probably think that you do.
Good point. So difficulty is another really interesting thing, right? So when I popped in the game, and this is how I typically approach a game, I don't do anything other than start playing the game however it comes out of the box, so to speak. But I pretty quickly, not because I'm an expert, because I'm not, but I mean, I am a veteran of the Forza series, not just Horizon, but Forza proper. And I play a lot, relatively speaking, from my percentage of games. I played a really high percentage of Forza 6, especially, compared to other kinds of games. So I played a lot of Forza over the last couple of years. So probably within the first three or four races, because like you said, Dr. Ken, I mean, getting out in front quickly is kind of no fun. There's a bunch of little difficulty settings, right? It's not just like, okay, you're either on easy, you know, pro or hard. It's like, okay, well, you have a bunch of different flips that or switches that you can flip. So I made the driver tars a little tougher, and then I went in and I got rid of the racing line except for in the turns. And mm-hmm. So you get a little more credits for that. But that's all the difficulty setting that I've done, and I think I might need to increase it more because I still find myself, if I'm in a three-lap race, by the time I get to the third lap, most of the time I'm in first place. And again, that's sometimes because I've used Rewind. But what's your difficulty settings? What have you adjusted, Dr. Ken? Where are you right now?
So I've turned the simulation steering on because I just think that it's easier to drive with simulation steering, having been familiar with the Forza games in the past. I think I'm on highly skilled AI, and I don't use any lines on the road at all.
In the turns?
No.
Wow.
No.
I don't know how you keep track of where you're going.
Hardcore, dude.
Well, see, I these are my roads. I know these
That's
roads.
True. Yeah.
This is my backyard, so you know I know where to turn left because you go get to the shops to get the video back to the video shop. So that's easy. In terms of the assists, I leave traction control on, but I turn off ABS because who's hitting the brakes anyway?
right.
So yeah, that and I mean traction control is I think is a pretty much a must. There are so many cars here that have so much power, so. Traction control is basically the only assist that I leave on, as well as, of course, the rewinds.
And what about damage? Do you have the damage set to the default, which is cosmetic, or does your damage actually cause your car to get in trouble?
Yeah, no, I do have the damage turned on, and I kind of regret that. What I would like them to have is actually have a feature where you have cosmetic damage in the free roam, but damage in the races is real. Because what I do find is that when I'm driving around in free roam, you tend to take, you know, more risks and drive across the outback in a Lamborghini or a Ferrari or anything, and then you do some jumps and suddenly your diff is broken, and that's no fun. So I'm tempted to go to the cosmetic damage route, but I do also like seeing my car degrade as I go along, and launching your Lamborghini off the cliff at the 12 Sisters and doing a three flips. It seems only fitting that you actually have some form of damage that that occurs then.
What are your settings on the difficulty, Mr. Stewart?
I honestly don't remember most of them. I've still got traction control on for exactly the same reasons as stated, because the cars have so much power, the supercars especially and the hypercars. But I do leave the lines on because I would have no clue where I'm going, where this is set, where, you know, most of the tracks are part of an open world. I just would have no clue where I'm going. So I leave those on mostly just as guidance. The Drivatar difficulty I've got bumped up, I think, a few levels. And really, that's actually one of the things that I really like about the game, is that if you keep winning over and over again, there will come a point where the game itself will say, you've been winning a lot. Do you want to up the difficulty a little bit? And I'll normally just say yes. So, yeah.
What about the car tuning? That's another aspect where people like me and CJ won't ever even think about going into, you know, tuning the tire ratios and the wheel adjustments and the downforce and Lord knows what's going on in there. But both of you guys have that tinkerer's mentality. Do you get into the individual car tunings, Dr. Ken? And if so, what do you do to them?
No, I gotta say I don't. My favorite part of the upgrade system though is that they've introduced a whole range of body kit modifications to cars, and so any chance that I have to attach a ridiculous bull bar or set of lights or a roof rack or anything that's ridiculous on my vehicle, I will. And I'm very proud of my Mitsubishi Lancer that I've got that has the spare tire on the roof, a full set of rally lights, a massive rear spoiler, complete with a police car livery. So I have created a police car rally car. Because why not? You know, it's that sort of fun sort of thing. So, yeah, I'm not a great tuner, but any chance that I get to put some fuzzy dice or a giant bull bar on a car, then you got to take those chances.
Do you get into your car tunings at all, Greg?
No, not in this game because, again, this is just a game that I like to sit down, press A, and drive.
Press A to race.
Yeah.
So, you know, you mentioned the livery. So whenever you get a car, you have the option to implement one of dozens, if not hundreds, of various, you know, paint, sticker, whatever the hecks they are that are made by the community, or you can go with the manufacturer colors. I don't know what it is about me, but I only pick manufacturer color paint jobs and apply
them. You're such an old man.
What, I don't know why that is, but like I look at all those crazy different you know, paint options they have with all this with nuttiness. I'm just like, nope, not that. Give me that red or that yellow, or occasionally go crazy and go purple. Do you? I mean, we know Dr. Ken goes nuts with his with the looks of his cars. Greg, what do you do with yours?
I generally, grab one of the user created liveries. I'm terrible at using those tools, and I honestly don't remember the last time in a Forza game that I sat down and tried to create a livery myself. It has to have been years now. But that's one of the things, again, that I love about what they've done with the community is that they were smart enough to start saying, you know what, let's get these amazing liveries that people are creating and make it part of the game. So I will generally pick something. I'm a sucker for sort of classic racing liveries. You'll find the Martini white, blue, and red, or like a Golf, the blue and red Golf cars, or anything that looks like an old Marlboro McLaren. But that being said, if I get a car like a really nice Ferrari or something like that, I'll generally stick with the Ferrari red.
There you go.
Because it just feels wrong.
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah, I got to agree with that. It's those the reverence needs to be there for that.
But so, you just need a Ferrari red with some My Little Ponies on it, and then it goes faster.
My daughter would love that.
Yes, she would.
There's the other part too is that there's obviously Aussie cars in the game, and what's really pleasing is that many of the designers have gone out and recreated the classic racing liveries of the legends of Australian motorsport.
That's
and
fantastic.
So if you pick the Monaros there, you've got the winners of Bathurst, which is our great national race, our version of Daytona, our version of Indianapolis. You've got the Peter Brock liveries, the Jim Richards Subaru, the Skyline liveries. It's I believe that you know, because I had the game on day one with the Ultimate Edition, and they already had all these user designs in the game on launch. So I suspect that they must have seeded the game with many of their good creators from previous games, and meant that from day one there was all these wonderful user created designs.
Absolutely, I mean it's one of the most brilliant moves they've ever made. Having the amount of content that the audience has generated for these games is staggering. Talking about the Aussie cars and everything like that, it's actually one of the things that brings a smile to my face in this game. Is of course there are Holdens. Or I don't know if they're HSV or whatever, but you know the Holden, which is actually my son's name, so he gets a real kick out of seeing cars with his name on it.
Nice, that's awesome.
Because of course those aren't available here, but
and soon, very sadly, will not be available in Australia either.
Yes, because
the production in real life of all those Aussie-made Holdens and Fords is going away. So this is a kind of a last great hurrah of the Australian muscle car and the Utes and the Monaros and all those awesome vehicles.
Do you have a racing wheel set up, Dr. Ken?
No, and I must say that I've walked past many shops with racing wheels in the last couple of months, and I've walked slowly past them with a leftward glance. My problem with the racing wheel is less the amount of money that you'd have to spend on it, which is a substantial amount of money, but it's more that the idea of a setup. So I'm lucky enough to have a gaming room, but the infrastructure of getting a table and a chair and things like that is something I think that puts me off having a racing wheel.
I've got a suggestion for you. Throw it out there. I might get you in trouble with this.
This sounds like an enabler.
Yeah, I actually use something called a Playseat Challenge. It's by Playseat, which is one of those companies that you get all these great racing wheels from. But it's literally a fold-up racing wheel chair. You mount the wheel directly to it, so it's nice and stable, and you mount the pedals directly to it, but it folds up like a lawn chair, and you can put it in a closet when you're not using it.
I believe you tweeted a picture of your son in that, didn't you, Greg?
I did, yes. Yeah. They're not that expensive when you're talking about wheel chair setups, but... It's because I have a very small place and I don't have a gaming room, and that is how I deal with that, is that it's all folded up, it's all mounted, so I literally take it out of my closet, unfold it, plug it in, and I'm ready to go.
I mean, a good wheel, and obviously we're dealing with bizarre Australian prices where it's all upside down and everything, but a good wheel will cost me as much as a PS4.
Good Lord.
So, yeah, that's the there is a substantial investment required to get a wheel. And these games, I mean, with the exception perhaps of Assetto Corsa, which I must say I haven't played myself, all these games on consoles control so beautifully with a controller anyway.
They really do, yeah. A wheel, for me, is not worth getting for these games. I will agree with that.
So, plenty more to talk about, plenty more coverage of Forza Horizon 3 on Hit the Pass. As I mentioned, Dr. Ken has a couple of various pieces on Forza Horizon 3 and Hit the Pass. We will have a sort of a review roundtable as well, featuring Greg and Dr. Ken, as well as myself, because I'm actually playing this one, in addition to this show. But I also want to touch on a few others. So you sort of go from one extreme to the other when you talk about moving from Forza Horizon 3, which, as we've talked about, is really a massively broad appeal, to the latest F1, and correct me if I'm wrong, this is F1 2016, am I right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's good. Correct. Just want to make sure, because we know sports/yearly, you know, dated games. We're playing Madden 17 right now, although it ain't 2017. So, okay, F1 2016, also very highly regarded game. There's an excellent piece on Hit the Pass, which Dr. Ken and Greg both contributed significantly to. How would you compare F1 2016 to Forza Horizon 3 from a mechanical, from a racing standpoint? They are both known for their racing, but these are very different games. So, Dr. Ken, sort of contrast the two just from a racing perspective.
So it's funny. I've been switching between the two games in the last couple of days because I really, really liked this year's F1 game. I'm a huge F1 fan, and so there's that aspect to it. F1 2016 might as well be called Tire Manager 2016 because on the long races, they have whereas Forza is obviously all about the world and everything like that, F1 is all about the car. And in particular, it's actually all about that little bit of rubber that connects the road to the car, which is your tires. And in F1, in the real sport of F1, F1 cars have each team is given multiple sets of tires which have different levels of compound. And so they have soft tires and medium tires and hard tires, and there's variance between them. And essentially, an F1 car is designed to be F1 tires are designed to be very sticky, so they stick to the road, so they grip more, so you can go faster. But with stickier tires, they wear out. And if your tires wear out, you can't grip anymore. And so a set of very soft tires will be faster, but for a shorter amount of time. And what the F1 game has done is take that minutia and transfer it into an amazing game, because they've actually simulate your tires, they simulate everyone else's tires, and in a long race, in a 30-lap race, you'll get these incredible situations where you've got fresh, soft tires, and the AI car in front of you has got tires that are wearing out, and you will see them struggling to drive, and you'll be able to drive faster, and vice versa. When you're on bad tires and they're on good tires, it is run, rabbit, run, and you're not going to be able to keep them off your tail. And that is an amazing game. I've had races where I've been in the lead and my tires have failed. I've had situations where I've been in the back of the field and be able to push my way through on the last couple of laps through a pit stop. The strategy element in this game is really, really well done.
Greg, I believe you mentioned it in the F1 discussion on Hit the Pass, how you had a race where I think you came in 13th, and it was like the most fun you've ever had. How is that possible in F1 2016?
Well, I think, Dr. Ken, it's funny because the story that I wanted to tell here tonight is exactly about that. And I think actually you said something in our roundtable where you said every race is its own story. And they've done that so perfectly in the latest F1 game. You're right. And just as an example, I've been playing career mode in a manner, which is the worst car on the grid. but I've been developing it, and I feel like maybe I didn't set my difficulty high enough, because I'm actually able to qualify in the top five pretty regularly now and run well. But I'm hard on tires. I'm very hard on tires, which is the reason why I think I can run so well, but just not for very long. And I just ran 36 laps in Austria the other night, and I always take the extra stop, because when you start the race and you get to choose between two different tire strategies, or you can create your own, I always take the extra stop because I just know that I'm rough on tires. And one of the wonderful things about this game this year, which we speak about in that roundtable, is that the engineer that's in your ear during the race, he's actually helpful this time around. And one of the things he'll do is offer up different tire strategies during the race. And of course, because this game has voice commands, you don't need to stop and use a menu to say yes or no to them. You can actually just call out and stay with the current, you know, stay with current or go with the new one. So anyway, I was running this race, and everything Dr. Ken just said, you know, I'm stopping at different times than everyone else, and I'm sort of really jockeying with the Ferraris and Hamilton, because Rosberg fell out of the race for the second week in a row, which was great. And by the end of the race, I'm running third. And just before my final stop, I've been running ultra softs almost all day long, which don't last very long. And I stopped with 8 laps to go. And just before my final stop, my engineer called it and said, I got a different strategy I think you should use. And I didn't really look, and I said no. And I went in on my final stop, and I got a set of ultra softs. Just so you know, if you're running hard in Austria, ultra softs will not last 8 laps. So I came out of the pits, and I slotted back in, and a couple other guys made their stops. So I'm running third, and I've got Hamilton breathing down my neck, and it's exactly what Dr. Ken just said. I'm flying for the first few laps, and then I'm starting to lose grip, and I'm starting to skate around a little bit, and the turns on this track are very bumpy, and there's a lot of elevation change, and Hamilton is just getting closer and closer and closer and closer. And with about 2 laps to go, my engineer's saying, you've got to pit. You've got to pit. Pit now. Box, box, box. And I'm like, nope, we're going for it, boys. Like, I am not, because, of course, I've got a rivalry going with Massa, who I know is running in the top 10. I don't know where he is, but I know he's in the top 10, and I know if I stop, he's going to pass me. Yep. So it's like, I've got to beat this guy. I've got to beat this guy. I don't care if I don't get on the podium. Hamilton's going to pass me. That's fine. I've got to beat this guy.
Just give up the spot and keep on going. Yep.
Yep. And so I did, and I'm trying to manage my tires, and damned if I came around the final turn just past the pit entrance, left front tire goes. And that's, you know, I'm running a 36 lap race, because so that's almost an hour's worth of racing.
Oh my gosh.
And I can't do anything about it. And I was third when it blew, and I ended up 14th.
Oh.
And you know what? And Rich, you're going to scratch your head to this. Some of the most fun I've ever had in a racing game.
Well, no, I get it. It's just that last part that you added an hour That blows my mind.
And I love it because, again, every race is a story, and they've done that so perfectly because they've mixed up the strategy that all the AI drivers use this year, which is not the way it was last year as far as I can remember. So some drivers are on four-stop strategies. Some are on two. Like my teammate, Pascal Wehrlein, he was leading the race at one point because he was going for, I think, a two-stop race. Mm. And that's awesome. Like, I love it because it mixes up the field and you get exactly those situations that Dr. Kim was talking about. And it just makes a 36-lap race constantly exciting.
I mean, so things that on the sort of the back of the box are the things that don't, yeah, you see them and think, oh, well, this is a feature that doesn't mean anything, like the introduction of the safety car this year.
Oh,
the
yeah.
What that does, though, is that if you're running behind the safety car, of course, you're not burning up your tires as quickly. And so you can change your strategies based on that. So not only is it cool to have the fact that there's a safety car, it actually makes meaningful moments in those games. I had a race at Silverstone the other day, which is terribly difficult on tires, and was really struggling, and the safety car came out, and it meant that I was able to get three more laps out of tires that were completely gone. And then that meant I bumped up three more spots than I would have in that race. The other amazing feature they've got in the game is the obviously the weather and the weather transitions. And you'll see that it will be quite sunny, and the Jeff, who's your race engineer, will come over and say, we're expecting rain in 20 minutes. And so you kind of do some mental maths as you're doing these long races of, okay, 20 minutes, that's 20 minutes a lap, da-da-da. Oh, dear. I think that I'm going to – my pit stop is going to occur just before the rain comes, which means that I'm going to come in and put on fresh, dry weather tires, and then it's going to start to rain, and I'm going to have to come in again. So what do I do? Do I take the gamble and try and run an extra lap? Do I change my strategy and come in earlier and put on super softs? All these things come into play. And occasionally you'll ask for the weather report, which you can do literally just by using your voice on Kinect if you're on Xbox. And Jeff will say, I don't know what the weather's doing. And at this point you go, well, what good are you to me, Jeff? Get the radar out and work out whether it's going to rain or not. But it's every race has little stories. And it was absolutely fantastic in that regard.
That's exactly how I got my first podium in career mode, was in Canada, which was nice to do that at my home track. Along the same lines, when you pick your tire strategy at the beginning of a race, it'll tell you what they figure the delta is. It'll say, like, if you go with this strategy and you know, it'll tell you if you conserve tires or if you're running really hard or whatever we're trying to do, this is how long we think the race is going to take. These are the exact time, right down to the, I think, I don't know, thousandth of a second. But they also very nicely put sort of the weather report on a timeline right around, you know, where they think it's going to start raining and when, what stops you're going to be on. And I actually chose a much slower strategy in Canada because it said it was going to rain right there. And it paid off because I was not the fastest car on the track. I wasn't a top five car, but a lot of anybody who was on like a two-stop strategy ended up pitting four laps before it started to rain. And then it was a torrential downpour, whereas I pitted much earlier than that. And then on my scheduled stop, I came in at a perfect time to put on full wets. And I ended up getting, I think, second.
You know, to this American, F1 is a very exotic series. Does this game do a nice job of representing the wildly different locales that these races take place?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean,
it does okay. I think that it does a broadcast style presentation. So the kind of the overview of the track that comes in is quite nice. It's all got all the F1 styling. So if you've ever watched it on TV, it's a very familiar look to it. I mean, you know, some of those things, you know, they only have a limited number of cutscenes, and I'm in the towards the end of my first season here, and some of those are starting to grate, and there's only so many lines of dialogue that they have. But yeah, I think it does as a pretty good job conveying that stuff.
Yeah, like racing through, as an example, racing through Baku, which was one of the new tracks this year, and it has this amazing chicane in it that goes right up along a castle wall. You know, I mean, it's there. It's not the most incredible thing, and they don't make as big a deal out of it as I think they could. But they still do a good job, you know, like racing through there and then going over to, say, like I was saying at in Austria. I mean, you're up in the mountains, and they do a good job of sort of showing all that stuff off.
Dr. Ken, you mentioned another game, which I'm completely unfamiliar with. And Greg, I don't even know if you have it. Assetto Corso?
Assetto Corso.
Yeah. What is that? And where does that, I mean, you mentioned a little bit, you know, it's not exactly your AAA, but it feels like from what little I know about this game, it really is geared at you guys, right? Like this game is all about the racing. It might not be about any sort of bells and whistles or extra presentation. It's just about racing. What kind of a racing game is this? Is it any good? And who is it targeted for?
Yeah, so I was really excited that Assetto Corsa was finally coming to consoles. I don't have a gaming PC, so it's a title that has been in development on PCs for a number of years now, and has been it's one of these games that's been incrementally updated over the years. I haven't played it yet. With the fact that F1 came out and Forza Horizon on the horizon, so to speak.
Nice.
It was too many games. From what I've read and what I've seen, it sounds like it is a bit of a work in progress on consoles, and that they have released a large patch. The thing about Assetto Corso is that it is much like Project Cars. It is a game that is trying to be a simulation, and as such, it. You know, relies on you being able to maneuver these cars with great skill and the like. But for what I've heard from people that I trust, it sounds that the AI of it needs a bit of a tuning, that they've actually made the AI a little bit too difficult, that the AI doesn't seem to be obeying the same rules as you are in terms of the difficulty of control. I suspect that if it gets a little bit cheaper, and as I, you know, the Forza wears off on me and I complete the F1, that I'll probably pick up Assetto Corsa at some stage and give it a go.
Greg, have you gotten your hands on this yet?
I have, and all that is true. It's kind of cool. I mean, you feel like you're sort of supporting the little guy, because this is a small team as far as I know, and it's definitely been a grassroots production. I believe it's an Italian development group. I think they're actually based at an actual racetrack. But yeah, it's a decent simulation that has none of the bells and whistles of the big boys. As an example, like, you know, if you're somebody who uses a racing line, we were just talking about F1. F1 uses a dynamic racing line if you want to use it, where it'll be bright red when you're supposed to brake, but as you get down to the proper speed, it'll actually go yellow and green and tell you, okay, now speed up. This game has a racing line. It doesn't do that. It also doesn't adjust itself based on the type of car you're in. So if you're driving around in a full F1 car, you know, your braking zone is going to be quite short. Whereas if you're driving in a big, heavy sedan or something like that, you're going to want to brake a lot sooner. You don't get that information. The menu system, like when you cross the finish line, everything just stops. Your car drops into the pits. You've got a menu in front of you. It stops. There are no bells and whistles. The driving is nice. But you need a wheel. You've got to use a wheel. I found the game almost unplayable using the controller. I'm playing on the PS4. Mm. But with the wheel, it was actually quite enjoyable. And what it does have going for it, and I don't know if they're going to add more tracks, but it definitely scratches an itch, because they've got some interesting tracks and some interesting cars in there. What I mean by that, especially for an F1 fan like me, and I know you are as well, Dr. Ken, they've got some classic F1 cars. We're talking like the sort of the cigar style, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they've got those. Yeah. And for me, in particular, the track that I really like, although they've got, I'm trying to think, I think the track in Holland, the old F1 track from Holland.
Like Zandvoort.
Zandvoort. That's it.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that's in there. They've got Monza as it was when they used the ring.
Mm. Yeah, with the bank circus.
The bank circuit. So the lap is literally, and of course no chicanes. So the lap is literally you start and you go down what is currently the front stretch and up around the current track. But when you come back to the front stretch, you're actually doubling up and then going off into the forest on this gigantic concrete banked oval that they used to run, which I've been dying to have in a simulation game, especially on a console, for years and years and years. So it was kind of like, for me, that was the tipping point. just to have something like that. But I would say your plan is right. Wait till it's cheaper. And if you don't have a wheel, really consider whether you want to spend the money.
I think Greg is really trying hard to sell me a wheel.
I've noticed that for this podcast. I have definitely noticed that.
No, but it is. I mean, I played it with the wheel for the first time, and it was enjoyable. Then I tried playing it with the controller a couple times, and I actually just I couldn't stand it.
Another racing game that has recently come out and is important for several reasons is, and again, Greg, correct me on the title if I get this wrong, NASCAR Heat Evolution.
Yep.
Do I have that right? Okay.
You have that right.
It is the first NASCAR game on the current consoles, the PS4, Xbox One generation. There is, or will be in the next couple of days, if you're listening to this podcast right when it comes out, a review roundtable discussion about this game with Greg and our own TJ, that sports gamer, Lauerman. Greg, you're not quite as high on NASCAR as you were hoping to be and as you are on most of the other games we've been talking about tonight. What's up with NASCAR Heat Evolution?
Well, if you end up reading that roundtable, I feel like I come off a lot more negative than I feel like I should be. We're coming off some pretty dark times when it comes to the NASCAR franchise. Utechnics took it over for the most recent, I don't know, 4 or 5 years, and they weren't good. They weren't good for a lot of reasons. The racing itself wasn't great. The AI was awful. Like, as an example, driving down Daytona doing 220 miles per hour, the field would brake check you in the middle of the backstretch for no reason whatsoever. Like, a lot of that sort of thing was happening. But the thing that really always grabbed me about it was that there was zero, it felt like either zero respect or really zero knowledge of the sport itself. And it was in the minutia, and it'll sound stupid when I start speaking about things like this. But for example, they race at a road course called Watkins Glen, and they're actually going the opposite direction. They're actually going clockwise on that course, as opposed to normally in NASCAR you're going counterclockwise. And so to save, I'd say, on assets, the pit lane was reversed. It wasn't the actual pit lane you found at the real track, because that way they could use all the animations they used on the oval. Little things like that, but all over the place. So with Heat Evolution, just a little bit of the backstory on that is that it's developed by Monster Games, which developed the NASCAR Heat series back in the early 2000s, which was a great series.
I love that series.
Yeah. So you've got that pedigree, which is great. And it's published by Dusenberry Martin Racing, which is actually a lot of those people, including Ed Martin, one of the primaries, are from – Ed was worked on the NASCAR Heat series. I believe he might have worked on the Papyrus NASCAR games as well. And he was sort of one of the major people who was working at EA when the Thunder series really took off, and it became a fantastic series of games. And I know a few other people that are working at DMR are also from EA, from the NASCAR team there. So I had high hopes. And the game plays all right. It feels like a reskin NASCAR Heat from the early 2000s. It's all built in Unity. It doesn't look that great, but again, it's the minutia that drives me nuts. You go in and you play, say you're running practice before your career race. You don't get to see what times anyone else is running. You don't get that information. So you've got a lot of settings you can fiddle with, but you don't know if you're running a competitive time, stuff like that. During the racing, the other thing that I found in career mode is that it's actually using a rubber band AI. So if you fall back, everybody slows down. And when you speed up and get to the point where it seems like the game has decided you should be, and I know, like, in my career, I'm always finishing 19th or 20th, but it's because when I get to 19th or 20th, everybody speeds up. It's really a really bizarre setup. And I'm just not very happy with it. And then little things like the braking is awful. If you tap the brake, your car just goes into a four-wheel slide, and I don't know why. And the reason I feel like it feels like a reskinned NASCAR Heat from the early 2000s is because none of the speeds are right. NASCAR's gotten significantly faster in the past 15 years on purpose, and it's not reflected in this game at all. It's running... you're running lap times that feel 15 years old. So there's just, I had high hopes, and I know that it's the first game for these guys, which is why there is a good foundation here, but it's disappointing because of the pedigree. I was really expecting a lot more. And then real quick, sorry, to add insult to injury, there's a lot of content that are locked behind gates in this game, including the tracks. There are like 20 NASCAR tracks, and when you start the game, they're actually split into three, so you only got something like eight to start with. So if you want to run Bristol, which is always sort of my litmus test with these games, because I want to see how 40 AI drivers handle being stuck on a mile and a half oval.
It's equivalent to Monaco, that every F1 game you've got to play Monaco.
Exactly. You're exactly right. Because not only that, it's also a really good test of the engine as far as like what's the frame rate like? Because if it's going to be bad anywhere, it's going to be bad at Bristol. You can't play it. You can't play it. It's not available until you've put in a couple hours. And then finally, the other thing that really blew me away is that it's riddled with paid DLC for like different car skins and different challenges. You have to go buy those.
So you've got people that you know how to make racing games. You've got a situation where they're a brand new developer that's probably paid a king's ransom for the license for NASCAR. And you've got people who are basically have tried to take whatever code they could rescue from a 10 or 15 year old series and build on that. So is it a situation where you believe that over time this particular game can get updated and patched and modded, and maybe enough people buy the DLC to where they can get the revenue to do things, and this game in and of itself will look very different 6, 9, 12 months because of that? Or do you think that this is something where they're going to get what they can, and I don't mean in a cynical or mercenary way, but they're going to get what they can from this and then try to pour it into version 2? What's your sense with what this series is or will be?
I feel like the amount of work that needs to be put into this to bring it up to snuff, they really should be spending that on the next version, which you pretty much in a nutshell have described what worries me and what also gives me hope. What worries me is that they don't make enough revenue off this game, but it's been advertised heavily by NASCAR itself, which is nice. So I'm hoping that they do make the money they need to keep going, because all of everything that I've just said being said, I know that this crew can make a great NASCAR game. They've done it before, right?
They know what to do, but
right.
We all know that making a game on the current generation, much less the next version of these, are the amount of work, assets, math, you know, geometry that it takes to make a game on. Most people have no idea. I barely have an idea, but it boggles my mind the amount of massive engineering and complexity goes into making these games. It is incredibly difficult and 1,000 times more complex now than it was 10 years ago.
Yeah, and I mean, what gives me hope, like I say again, the team is there. They've done it before. They've got a massive appreciation for the sport. So that's great. And you've also got drivers involved. Like, I know Brad Keselowski and Joey Logano in particular, and I think a few others are actually, I believe, investors in the company. So it's there. The pieces are there. But this year was a bit of a letdown.
Dr. Ken, any interest in NASCAR? Like, are you a big NASCAR fan, a moderate NASCAR fan, or does it not even hit your radar?
I know of it. certainly, it's shown on the pay TV, on the sports channels over here. The game isn't available in Australia, neither digitally nor on shelves. So, and that's been the case of many NASCAR games. Obviously, there's some form of licensing issues there. You know, I've imported games in the past, but based on everything I've heard and read, look, it sounds like a bad game. So, that's unfortunate because, you know, racing games are cool and I love my racing games, but no, not that.
All right. We need a V8 Supercars game.
Well, I mean, the Toca World Series was pretty close to that. We actually did have some V8 Supercar games back in the PS3 days as well. I don't know that we do need a V8 game, to be honest, because the recreation of V8s in Forza is so good, and you've got Bathurst, which realistically is probably the only V8 car of track that I'd recommend driving, because a lot of them are too small. That and Surface Paradise, but yeah, we already have our great V8 game. That's Forza Horizon and Forza Horizon 3 and Forza 6.
So, Dr. True. Ken, last question for you, and this one actually comes from our good friend Night Attack 09, famous on the Player One podcast boards. It's Adam Burnett. He's the community manager for Franchise Hockey 3. He asks, Drive Club plus PSVR equals, huh? Are you jumping into PlayStation VR? Does Drive Club VR mean something to you? Are you excited? Are you on the fence? Where are you with Drive Club and PSVR, which is a launch PSVR hallmark title, I believe?
Well, I mean, I'm really intrigued by VR. I haven't tried it yet. I suspect that I'll be in the group of people that vomit immediately on putting the headset on, even before they turn it on, because I do have a habit of getting motion sick. I don't have a PS4 yet, so the idea of getting a PS4 and getting a VR works out pretty well. You know, I could remortgage the house and get a racing wheel at the same time. you know, what, in for a penny, in for a pound. Instead, I might just start my own racing series in Australia. It might be cheaper. Nice. Yeah, it's certainly something that's very, very intriguing. I want to try VR desperately, because I think it looks really, really cool. Everyone that obviously I've spoken to about it who has tried it says it's an amazing experience, and we'll see whether the actual games justify that or whether it's going to be another thing that these big game console manufacturers release and then don't support.
Greg, I know you're in on VR. I know you're I believe that you have pre-ordered PSVR, and I'm sure Drive Club in PlayStation VR is a day one for you. Am I accurate on that? And if so, what do you know about it, or what do you think about it, or is it all sort of an unknown and you're just waiting to give it a go?
I don't have any particular affinity for Drive Club. So there's that, but I am in on VR day one, and I mean, me being who I am, I don't plan on picking up Drive Club immediately, but I'm pretty sure I'll be there eventually. Mm-hmm. Because that is, you know, talking about VR, we're going to have a lot of experiences, what they'll be calling experiences, very short little bite-sized chunks of play. But if you want to talk about fully-fledged traditional video games, the racing genre is going to be, in my opinion, the genre for VR to shine. So that's the reason I'm getting it, is to play racing games.
Well, all right. So much more that we could talk about. But as I mentioned, we are literally on opposite sides of the globe, and we have to let Greg go to bed and Dr. Ken get to work. So thank you both very much, Dr. Ken from Hit the Pass, Greg Seward from Hit the Pass, and of course, the best show on the internet, the Player One podcast, and the fantastic web series all about Sega Generation 16. Thank you, gentlemen, both very much for coming on the show. We appreciate it. And let's do this again soon, shall we?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Fantastic. Cheers, gentlemen.